So, we were just talking about Coming to America. And spoiler, the big plot with this one is that in between scenes of the first movie that we never saw, he hooked up with Leslie Jones.
Well,
And they had a kid together.
wow.
And so it's about that.
I do like Leslie Jones, though, a
She's pretty
lot.
good.
She's
She's
always
pretty good.
wonderful.
Yeah.
She's always wonderful.
So it was he needs a male heir, or the neighboring kingdom is going to attack.
Sure.
He's got three daughters, but no male heir. Then he finds out he does have a male heir with Leslie Jones. And so he goes back to New York to meet that child, bring him over. The next generation of kids of like so his son, his daughters in it, they're all pretty good. Tracy Morgan plays Leslie Jones's brother, and that just works. The two of them just work. I really like Tracy Morgan though. I unapologetically like Tracy Morgan.
What's to apologize for?
The Last OG is a lot of fun. Julie and I watched that. It's his TV show that he went to jail and after 15 years gets out of jail and comes back to meet his old girlfriend, finds out that he has twin kids with her. His ex is Tiffany Haddish. And she's now married to a white dude. That's a pretty good. That one's pretty fun too. If you're looking for something to binge, that one is not bad.
Do you know what it's on?
TBS?
TBS. Well,
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a TBS Plus.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where you can
Where I can
stream that
stream
right
that.
now.
Oh, I'll find it, Tony.
Yeah,
Don't
they've
think
got
I won't find
two or
it.
three seasons now. And they're not real long seasons. It's a comedy, so it won't take up that much of your time. It'll fill you up a day or two of binging.
Well, I got plenty of days to fill.
Yeah.
Plenty of days to fill.
But maybe a few less now that you're
Now that
getting a
I'm
prick.
scheduled up for my prick, for them to shoot those hot liquids into me.
Yeah, I'm 8 days away from being able to get my second shot.
Why was that?
Yeah. Speaking of timing, I don't know that we'll be recording next week. I just thought of that. It is
I
St.
don't think.
Patrick's Day, and that means it's
True.
Julie's birthday.
Yep.
So I don't know if we'll be recording.
Sure. Saves us a movie discussion.
It does. At least pushes it off for another couple of days.
You like pushing stuff off?
Yeah.
If I
So,
get Johnson and Johnson, baby, that's 29 days from Sunday.
yeah, that's not bad.
Mid-April, baby.
Yeah, once I get my shot, if I can get it like next, I'm kind of debating if I want to get it on Thursday or if I want to do it on Friday,
Yeah,
just
just have the
because,
weekend.
well, if I get that every, some people get those side effects where they get really sick for 24 hours. I'd rather have that be on a Saturday.
Yep.
Just not have to take a day off. Though I've got plenty of days that I can take at this point because I'm to the point now where I think it's about a month from now. Between now and a month from now, I need to take a day or I'll stop accruing again. I had that problem with Christmas and then I took like a week and a half off at Christmas. And now here we are again, right
Yep.
back at it. I'm going to stop accruing because turns out there's no reason to take days off when there's a pandemic and
Yeah, you can't
there
go
ain't
anywhere
shit
or
to
do
do.
anything. Yep. Speaking of, I decided what I'm doing for my birthday this year.
Oh yeah?
Key West, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the allure of Key West?
I just want to see it. I have that no, that's it.
Cool. No, that's
And I will have driven to three of the four corner states of this country in my car.
in your current
In
vehicle.
my current vehicle.
So what's the last one? California? Are you
Nope,
calling
California I
that?
did. No, I got California.
I thought so.
Yeah.
So
Washington.
Washington State.
which is really frustrating because, like, Thanksgiving of last year, Thanksgiving of the year before, I drove through Idaho.
Oh.
Yeah, and so if I had been thinking, I would have just, you know, taken the 2 or 3 hour detour to pick up Washington, just like clip the eastern edge. I mean, because I've, you know, been to Seattle several times.
Sure, sure.
Like, I've been to the state already.
yeah.
But just to pick up the fourth corner in my car.
It gives you something for another birthday or just a, you know, random weekend.
Yeah, but the problem,
it's not a weekend though. That's a long drive.
Yeah, that's the problem with the Northwest. The problem, it's just so fucking big.
Yeah,
it just takes for like driving from end to end over like the South Dakota is like 7 hours.
That's a lot of driving,
and it's a flat, featureless.
Yeah, that's a lot of driving.
Yeah, and I made the mistake of going there at Thanksgiving. So it was just like dark 18 hours a day. So saw like none of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
that's some summer driving though.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to do it just to.
Yeah. Just to do it. Like, and also I've got nothing shit else to do. So, but I think if I go to Florida, I'm actually have to do some map work and determine, cause I might actually have hit, the 48. The lower 48, I might have hit all of them in my car.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, except for Washington.
Except for Washington. I might, going to Florida might actually get me to 47.
Wow.
In that car alone. Right? Because the whole northeast loop I did, and then that'll be the entire southeast loop. And then I did the southwest loop before, and then the northwest. So I might actually be everything except for.
If all goes well in July, we're going to be going to AC and probably making stops in Philly and New York. We're actually going to vacation in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
But like Philly is only like a little more than an hour from there. Yeah. So, you know, roll over to Philly, have a cheesesteak and see the Liberty Bell.
Those things are so good.
Run up the steps of the library. Steps, yeah. Or, you know, walk up the steps.
Walk up the steps, yeah.
When it, you know, if I eat the cheesesteak before or after. Mm-hmm. And then probably to bookend either side of the vacation, either spend a day or two in New York, either before we get to Atlantic City or after.
Yeah. New York's got to be a wild place right now.
Yeah. Probably opening things back up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's our biggest concern right now if we're going to go is, will there be enough open things to do? Mm-hmm. Like, we'll be vaccinated. Well, three of the four of us will be vaccinated.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they approve it for younger people, Aaron will get vaccinated also. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, right now we're just looking forward, waiting for future times.
Yep. I mean, I feel like it's going to happen sooner rather than later now at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly because I think we haven't like medically, we haven't hit that hump of where it's fine, but I think socially this country is doing that.
Yeah.
Like against all advice, like in typical American fashion, against advisement, we're just going to do what we want now collectively.
Yeah.
So like that's just happening.
Yeah, well, and then you have states like Texas who are just saying, we want to be like Missouri.
Yeah, I was about to say, woo, Texas!
Yeah, I heard that Julie said that she saw an article that the Rangers are going to start, or they're going to open their baseball season and with 100% capacity.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they're just going to open things up.
Christ, I cannot get this vaccine in me fast enough. Now, no kidding. The problem is like, now it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are just going to be going everywhere. Like, before, there was, like, at least a modicum of social stigma around it. And, like, you didn't have these, like, sleeper maskless people. Like, you just, you know, you knew who to avoid. But yep. Now it's just going to be like fucking everybody.
Right.
Because you can go places again. So everyone is just going to do that. And then just zero people will disclose that they're going places when they're going places. Like, that's just absolutely how it's going to go.
Not only that, but like the people who have the vaccine, there's people who were begrudgingly masking up as it was.
Mm-hmm.
Then as soon as they get the vaccine, they're going to be like, I'm safe. I don't see why I have to keep doing this. And then they just won't.
Yep. And the people who don't want to, well, I've already been vaccinated, but they haven't been fucking vaccinated.
Like, right. Exactly.
That's also going to be a reality.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, the reality is that the vaccines are only so effective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm willing to take some risks with that, but I'm not going to be an asshole about it either.
Yeah.
You know?
My whole goal here was not to kill anybody else.
Exactly.
And I can say with really good confidence that I infected no people.
I'm still on the fence whether I had it last year. Because I think I might have, because I just had this lingering sickness that just did not go away for like a month and a half in like January, February.
Yeah.
And it was like right about the time that they're saying, yeah, there was probably some stuff going around. And there were a number of people at the garden that kind of had the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. maybe I already had it. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not taking any other chances, though.
I did not get sick. It's actually been really nice. I have not been sick in quite a while.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. It is going to be interesting to see, like, what this does to us socially.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, kids, just take kids in general. Like, you know, kids soak up the ambiance of whatever, like, the social zeitgeist is. Like, you know, they don't necessarily process that shit, but, like, also, you know, they just, like, latently absorb that kind of shit. And, like, how you treated the mask situation is kind of what your kids absorbed about the mask situation. So, like, during the big freak out in the beginning where all the toilet paper disappeared and stuff, like, you know, your kids were, like, soaking that in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just going to be, like, a weird thing to grow up with.
I wonder how it's going to affect the kids who are, like, I mean, holding an errand of an age where we can talk to them about it reasonably and, you know, explain,
mm-hmm.
this is what's going on, this is why we're reacting this way. Yeah, it really sucks that you can't see your friends.
Yep.
But, you know, and like, what really got rough was, like, the last 2 months, because, like, they had on and off seen some friends, and we're like, you know what? Hard stop. We're calling it a hard stop. We're too close
to the finish line.
To the finish. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we took some risks before and we probably did some things we shouldn't have done. And this really sucks, but we need to be safe. And now, like, now that we're seeing an end to this, we need to really be safe.
Yep.
And like, it's to the point now where Erin is counting the days until she can have her friend do a sleepover again, like literally counting the days. Because
mm-hmm.
we said, look, when the other three of us are fully vaccinated, you can do it. So she's like, all right, 2 weeks after. And then it was like, all right, wait, not Easter weekend.
Yeah, also so not Easter weekend.
Let's do it the weekend after that. So, but yeah, by Easter weekend, we'll have had our 2 weeks out from our vaccine.
God damn.
Yeah. So like the planning has already begun for the masked Easter. Family Easter.
Mm. Oh yeah. Because your parents already have it.
Yeah. They got their second shot this past weekend. Doug and Sean will get their second shot like the weekend after I do.
Mm.
So like they'll be at like the 15-day point. My grandmother got it a couple days before my parents did. Ah, so
family.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in March sees Julie and I having our 50th birthdays. My grandmother turns 90 at the beginning of April, actually on Easter Sunday. So yeah.
That was a
Yeah. So it's going to be a, it's going to be a blowout, I believe. My niece had a birthday in March.
Just
well, and then there was
get it all.
All the birthdays we couldn't celebrate last year.
Yeah, that's going to be the big thing.
Yeah.
In fact, I was thinking we should do like just a weekend of just like a big catch-up weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Just do like multiple party event things. And it's like, okay, let's just list out all the celebrations we missed and let's just celebrate them all right now. Like show up in Halloween costumes.
Okay. You know, maybe we just get a bunch of people who want to have like a mini con.
Yeah.
Just find some place that has some reasonable hotel rates and a room that we can utilize for some games and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of Sausage Fest booze in the basement.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea. God damn, that's a good idea.
All right, let's get this rolling.
Yeah, I don't think Eric's going to show up.
I don't think so.
He hasn't been here or responded to me.
I don't believe so. Hey, this is Tony.
Butthole. Hey, this is David.
We are the Backseat Producers. Oh, wow, 505.
505?
That's an episode number.
Oh, that's a big number.
It just keeps getting bigger.
I've heard that before. Mostly from my doctor about my weight.
Well. So tonight we're going to talk about Judas and the Black Messiah.
Judas and the Black Messiah.
To my understanding, this is only on HBO Max for a couple of more days.
Until the 14th.
Okay, so if I do like I did last week, it'll actually still be on HBO Max even when we release the podcast version of this. Because I actually released it, like I was able to turn around and release it on Friday.
Yeah, if that's the case, though, and you're listening to this, and it's like you're gonna rush to watch this movie.
Yeah.
You're probably leaving shortly.
Or if you're safe and you feel confident in doing it, it is at the theaters.
Is it really? Theaters. Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, I actually noticed that. Yeah. Well, that's the deal with HBO Max and the Warner Brothers movies. That's why they're only putting them out for 31 days, something like that.
Yeah.
Is because they only allow for them to do that to respect the theaters, I guess.
Sure.
It's day and date with when they release to the theaters. They only do it for so many days on HBO Max. Then they pull it from HBO Max. I guess also maybe to get the rental revenue if there's some good word of mouth about a movie. Yeah. Rent it.
This movie is going to be nominated for an Academy Award like that. It has not been yet, but only because they have not released the...
actually, it would have to be next year, I believe, at this point.
It's already been nominated for other... Like, it's already won a Golden Globe.
Well, Golden Globes are different. Well, maybe... You know what? Maybe they had... Maybe there's a different release window. Maybe they released it in a New York theater in December or something.
Changed the release date criteria for this year's Oscars.
That very well could be.
Because no one was going to the theaters.
Pretty
so
messed
like,
up.
Yeah, because no one was going to the theaters, so I think they extended the window into like January or February or something, just because.
That could be. That very well could be. And this one has been released since like mid-February. Mm-hmm. I don't recall the exact release date, but because that was also the deal with Wonder Woman and some of the other movies that the Warners has been doing this with. Though I'll be honest, one of the first things I'm doing is going back to a theater.
Yep.
And they had said previously that they're going to do this with the Dune. They're going to do the pre-release. I think I'm going to go see that one in the theater.
Yep.
That one looks very pretty. Plus, I'm a sucker for the story.
Yeah.
I just started listening to it again because I had not, like, I'd read, like, with my eyeballs, read the book years ago. I've seen multiple iterations of the movie and the miniseries and that. And this is another one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
looking forward to seeing that one again.
Yeah, I'll probably see that in the theater.
All right.
I'm excited to see things in the theater.
Yeah, I know. It's the same.
I like going to the movies.
All right, so what did you think of Judas and the Black Messiah?
Ooh, this was a good movie, Tony.
This was a very good movie.
This was a well-done movie. That's my review. Shut it down.
Yeah, I concur.
Yep.
I feel the exact same way. Daniel Kaluuya. I think that's what we agreed how he should pronounce his name.
That's how we pronounce. Yeah, that's how we agreed that he should pronounce his name.
He was fantastic.
Yes. He, in fact, it's almost Kaluuya.
Right. Yeah, that's what we decided on last week. Kaluuya.
Yeah, but now I'm looking at the actual pronunciation on like Wikipedia.
Oh.
And I actually don't understand what the last symbol is here in the pronunciation. Oh, it's what is this? A in about. Kaluuya. Hmm. Oh, no Y?
Kaluuya.
Well, that's weird though, because when you hover over it, it tells you what that segment of the pronunciation is. But it doesn't give you anything for that J at the end. Oh yeah, it does. Never mind. I'm an idiot. Yeah, Kaluuya. Yeah. So I'm actually torn. Like I know this movie is going to get nominated, and I know he specifically is going to get nominated because, like, goddamn. But this is probably not the year to be nominated, because, you know, Chadwick Boseman is going to win.
Daniel Kaluuya won for Best Supporting Actor.
In what, Get Out?
In this. Oh. No, he won the Golden Globe.
Yeah.
He won the Golden Globe for this as Best Supporting Actor. I have a feeling that if he gets nominated for Best Supporting Actor...
Actually, that's true. Because
Boseman won for... He won for Best Actor.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, then they're not even the same category.
Yeah.
Best Supporting Actor, and this seems really a weird nomination.
It does, but there. I mean, he's not the main character.
He's not the main character, but also you see him more than you see the main character.
This is one of those movies, though, that's like The Dark Knight was. Where...
Fair point.
Where Heath Ledger was kind of the lead, but he was also kind of the supporting actor. Like,
yeah. It wasn't a Joker movie. It was a Batman movie.
It was a Batman movie, and Heath Ledger was such a huge presence in it. But he was also nominated as Best Supporting Actor.
Yep.
And ran away with it.
Yeah, well, he deserved it.
He did. He did. I think it's interesting that, though, that he has the asterisk by his name, though, that it was always he was always nominated as supporting actor, not as lead. Mm-hmm. Where Chadwick Boseman, releasing a movie posthumously that he is such a huge presence in, he's winning as lead actor.
The weird that feels weird to me too, because it doesn't feel like it feels like he's more supporting in that, and
it's such an ensemble. It's such an ensemble performance. He's got a couple of good monologues. But they're really good. Oh, they are very good.
Very good. Much like Daniel Kaluuya in this, like the thing opens with him giving that first speech, and I was like, ah, fuck. But then, like, he gives that speech, and every speech that he does from that point forward, like, he just was really fucking good.
It came off so naturally.
Yes.
Like it felt like he was speaking from his heart.
Yes.
But in such a powerful way. Like it was incredible. His performance was so good.
It was so natural that at moments it felt like I wasn't watching a movie. I was watching a biography, and he was just the dude that they were biographing.
Yeah.
Right? Like he was just like, this is just who this guy is, and this is currently what he's doing in the world right now. Like that's how like naturally it felt that he was that dude.
Yeah.
Story's super fucked up. Just,
oh my God. It's incredibly fucked up.
Every bit that I learn about this country makes me feel worse. Like all the history that was just like obscured from me. Every time I learn something new, it's like, fuck, man. Jesus Christ. Currently, I'm reading Stacey Abrams' Our Time Is Now, and so she's breaking down the 2018 governor election that she lost to Brian Kemp, and like all the voter suppression tactics that he used there, and then the genesis of like the Voting Rights Act, and then how like procedurally step by step they eroded the protections of the Voting Rights Act until like they're not there anymore. So these are the reasons and the ways that Kemp got away with what he was doing. And it's like, fuck. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and this was another eye opener to things that were happening in the infiltration of and the attempted disassembling of the Black Panther Party.
I mean, it was largely successful.
Yeah, it was. It was.
I mean, even colloquially, I was in my 30s when I learned that the biggest thing that the Black Panthers did was like fund education and feed people.
Yeah, I had no clue.
That is the majority of the stuff they did. That is never what I heard about the Black Panthers. That is not the only thing I ever heard about the Black Panther was they had guns and they were super violent. Like, that is the only thing I ever heard about them before that.
Yeah, even so much of the portrayal of the Black Panthers in popular media was just that they were militaristic, violent, weaponized, you know.
It's interesting, though, that this movie hits on something that, like, stereotypically, I never heard about the Black Panthers. Like, it really hammered on the communism socialism thing, right?
Yeah,
which that is not something I ever heard, which is not something I ever heard about them, like in the demonization propaganda, right? Like, I always heard about the violence and the militarization, but I never heard the communism socialism thing,
which is honestly really surprising. Like, it's surprising that that wasn't used as a bigger tactic against them in the 70s and 80s.
Definitely.
I mean, you know, the Soviets were our big enemy. You know, communism was bad, and socialism is terrible. Communism is evil, and you know, if that was a tenet that they stood by and openly preached, that wasn't the big problem. It was the big problem, as the media portrayed it, was those brown people have guns, and are mad, and that was it. I mean, that was the portrayal of them.
Yeah. Don't they know this is America and they should just be glad to be here?
That was even the portrayal of them in like Forrest Gump. You know, there's a scene in Forrest Gump that, you know, he ends up at a Black Panther rally, and it's through the eyes of Forrest Gump, who's not all there. And we see them being, you know, as being scary, and then they were okay with Forrest, but like everybody is, you know. Yeah, so it wasn't like they softened the blow to that image. There. Yeah.
Yeah. So knowing nothing about this guy, not even knowing that this was a real person and these were real events, like. When they were doing the interview in the beginning, I was like, all right, so we're just going to do this device, right? And then in the end, when they flipped to the actual interview, I was like, what? Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was...
Oh, shit.
Like, the movie, what's really interesting is that you have to watch the whole thing. Like, you get the sense of the place and the time and what was going on. And then you get to the last, 5-10 minutes of the movie. And then, like, everything shifts. Like, the world just falls out from under this story. Mm-hmm. It just takes such a left turn from where it was going. I mean, it was always headed there.
Yep.
But I didn't quite expect it to go down the way it did. I mean, even though it was all the truth, it was all the way things really happened.
I mean, I didn't want it to.
No, I was hoping for a different outcome.
Yeah. But also, I feel like I've kind of got this country's number now, so I basically know what to expect.
But if it did go, Yeah, if it didn't go down the way it did, it wouldn't have made a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
because it was terrible, but it was also still shocking, like the way it all happened.
Yeah, it was like the balls in that fucking guy to do that interview, though. Just,
oh my god!
Oh my fucking god! Like,
yeah, and then well, yeah,
what would you go tell figure. Your son? Oh, man.
Yeah, go they figure he commits question. Suicide right like, after that.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, fuck, how do you even answer that? It's like, oh, well, I'll just let history judge. Oh, that's not how you do it.
Uh-uh.
There were probably not a lot of right answers here, but there were definitely wrong ones.
And you know, as powerful as a performance that Daniel Kaluuya had, Lakeith Stanfield was amazing.
Yep.
Like, because he carried this, that he had to play that role so much more subtly than Daniel Kaluuya did. And it, I mean, because when he's giving those speeches, I mean, he's just eating it up. He is in the moment and he is acting his balls off. Yeah. And that's so, so powerful and evocative. And then, like, without having the big monologues, without having those moments of, you know, standing at a pulpit doing that, Lakeith Stanfield's like just also acting his balls off, but having to do it in so much more subtle a way. Like, yeah, that was, it was a really cool dichotomy in like the acting, the differences in the acting and the performances there.
Yeah. Let me clarify something I just said. I don't think his answer in the interview was good, but
no.
I do think that he does. I think the point he wants to make, but doesn't make well, is a reasonable point. And that, like, we were all in the struggle. And what I hope he means by that is it was a rough time. And there isn't an excuse for what he did. But, you know, when you're in a war and you do some things, there's a context, right? Like survival in a war situation, there's a context to your actions that don't usually justify them, but also life is complicated.
Yeah.
So
yeah, just like the FBI agent that brought him in, Jesse Plemons' character, like that guy had really good intentions, but they also got subverted along the way. Like it.
Yeah, but he only put up token resistance. That scene though with
Martin Sheen
playing Hoover. Like, oh my god, that whole sequence where he's like, "What are you gonna do when your daughter brings home a black man?" I was like, "Fuck this movie, man!
Yeah.
This is deeply uncomfortable." And I'm not even in this fucking room. I'm sitting alone in my computer room. There's nobody around, and I'm just there's an uncomfortable conversation. I don't want this conversation.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about my daughter? Yeah. Jesse Plemons, you're right.
Infant. She's right, 8 months Plemons. Old. Yeah, there was a lot of good acting all the way around. And we keep talking about the guys, but Dominique Fishback.
Oh, she's so good.
She knocked it out of the park, too.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't become, like, she really didn't become a character until the last, like, 20 minutes of the movie, until he gets out of prison. I mean, she was carrying a lot of weight of being in the background and making faces to let you know what other people were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't become really fleshed out until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And then she nails it.
God damn. That sequence where they shoot him in the head in the bedroom. And it's just like the still shot of her face. And she doesn't even flinch when they shoot. It's like, holy fuck. God. God damn.
Yeah. Well, how many times has she been in a similar situation and just not always literally, but emotionally beat down for reacting to injustices.
And you know what is like what's wild about this is the quantity of character development they do for her just when he reads the title of that poem she wrote. Like, am I going to be a bad motherfucker or am I going to be a bad mother? And it's like, fuck, that is...
Yeah.
That whole conversation there was fucking intense.
Well, and that's where, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's where she really stepped up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the writing for her was excellent. Her delivery was also excellent. Now, she's just wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see, because she's pretty goddamn young, isn't she?
I believe so.
How the fuck old is she? I don't know how she'll just come on IMDb. She can't be that old. It doesn't fucking tell me. Of course it doesn't tell me. Anyway, like she, 91. Okay. So yeah. Like she's got a career ahead of her.
Yeah. She's not even 30 yet.
Oh, she got a BAFTA award for this nomination for this.
She turns 30 in like less than 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got plenty of time.
Yeah, what was really wild to me was during the ending credits when they're giving like the fallout and the feedback, you know, like giving you just a little more context to the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come to find out he was 21 when he died. Like, mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That baby was born 25 days after he died.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that stuff, and looking at it, it's like, yeah, they could have changed some timelines to really make it seem like it's more dramatic than it is.
Yeah.
They didn't have to. Like, it was almost a shame they had someone as old as Daniel Kaluuya to play the role, because he looked a little more mature. He still looks really young.
He does look really young.
But he doesn't look 21.
He doesn't look 21, no.
But he still looks like he doesn't look like he's in his 30s.
No.
I would have guessed like mid-20s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, if he looked more like a 21-year-old, I think it would have been even more affecting when he gets murdered.
Oh, yeah. That's a tough scene, too.
But what's incredible to me is that he spent a while in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Before the baby was born, he was established as, you know, as the deputy chairman before he ever goes in jail, like before the two of them hook up.
Yep.
How young was he when he started all, you know, when he started his role and worked his way up through the Black Panthers? I mean, he had to have been incredibly young.
Mm. Yeah, he must have been. So Bill O'Neill, the other dude, he was 17 when all this shit went down. 17.
Holy shit.
I know. That's just fucking... You know what I was doing at 17?
Not this.
I was
doing
fucking nothing. I was doing nothing. Some super intense trivia about this. The day they were filming those scenes where he gets assassinated was the like 50th anniversary of Fred Hampton getting assassinated, like to the day.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
So Daniel Kaluuya is like, yeah, that was a pretty emotional day. We were all feeling some things.
Yeah, no shit.
Oh, I bet.
Bill O'Neill was 20 when Fred Hampton was assassinated.
Was he? I thought this trivia said he wasn't.
Oh, he may have been 19. I'm just looking at the dates. I don't know when, like what date Fred Hampton was assassinated.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Fred Hampton was only 21 years old at the time of his death, and William O'Neill was just 17 during the events. But I guess they take place over like a period of time, right? Because he's in jail for like 8 months, 8 or 9 months, right? Because she's pregnant. Obviously, she gets pregnant before he goes in, and then she's very pregnant when he comes out at like 8 months or whatever. So he was only in there for however long.
Holy shit. His death in the movie, they said it was suicide, and it sounds like it could be suicide. His wife claims that it wasn't, that it was an accident and that he had been drinking. But he ran into traffic on I-290.
Well,
which is part of the Chicago Loop. Mm-hmm. And so the police called it suicide. His wife said it was an accident.
Mm. Unsolved mysteries.
Yeah, it happened right after the interview aired.
Yeah.
And he was drunk at the time. So.
Yep.
I don't think so. We'll ever have an answer on that one.
The thing that he interviewed for, what the fuck was the name of the thing, the program that he interviewed for? Because I saw
Eyes on the Prize 2.
Yeah. What the fuck?
It's a Okay, so Eyes on the Prize was a 14-part documentary about the civil rights movement in the United States.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, so it's, between the two of them. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of looking up the info. The first one was set from Eyes on the Prize 1 was America's Civil Rights Years, 1954 to 1965. That aired in 1987. Mm-hmm. There were 6 episodes of that. Then there were 8 more episodes broadcast in 1990. Eyes on the Prize 2, America at the Racial Crossroads, 1965 to 1985. So
it's interesting. Like, you're that guy. And they're like, we want to interview you about your role in the assassination of this dude. And you're like, okay, I don't know that I would give the interview. Right? Like, I feel maybe at the point that he gets assassinated, you know, I have some very real thoughts on what my contributions to that would have been.
Yeah, I know.
But
I guess it also depends on where you're at in how you lived your life for 20 years after that happened and justified it.
Yep. It does say he kept working with the FBI and they kept giving him a lot of money. So fucking cops, man. Fucking cops. That's wild. That for me is one of the most outlandish things that the dude gives the interview after the fact. And he's like, well, I have no allegiance to the Black Panthers. Well, you know, that does feel fairly
accurate.
Yeah, fairly represented.
Yeah.
What else did this director do? Shaka King.
I don't know, but I was paying attention to the credits. Because I noticed that Ryan Coogler's name showed up as one of the EPs.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And I was like, oh, I wonder if he was involved in the creative part of the movie. Because I had no idea who had written or directed this or anything. Mm-hmm. So I paid really close attention and I saw that Shaka King's name kept appearing and that was the director.
Yep.
So, yeah, I have no idea beyond that. I didn't look anything else up because I was just... At that point, I fell into the movie.
Then I stopped fucking around on the internet.
Right.
Shrill, High Maintenance, People of Earth, Lasercism, Newlyweeds. I've never seen any of these things. But I'm pretty sure this is going to win some awards. So
yeah, I would not be surprised at all if it does. And hopefully gets him a lot more work, too. Because, man, he put together a fantastic film.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got cool hair.
Does he? I hadn't noticed.
He's got these red looking things and he's got them like flipped forward.
Oh, at least in his picture.
At least in his picture on IMDb.
I looked him up on Google and his Google search shows a fairly. Oh, I see.
Yeah, like devil's horn looking things. Yeah.
Yeah. The photo I see looks like a very short, almost conservative. Compared to some of these other photos.
Oh, you mean the good photos?
Yeah, like I'm seeing this one. I was like, I don't see what you're talking about with this good hair. And I was like, then I start looking deeper at the image search and said, oh, yeah, this is a good movie. This one deserves whatever awards it gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what's weird? We've had a really good string of movies lately.
We have. We even tried to pick some Netflix movies, and they surprised us.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm.
This one was definitely of a different caliber than a Netflix movie.
Yeah, I was thinking that, And I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was exactly about the movie, because like we've seen some really good talent over the last month. And like the stories have been really good, but we also haven't had I think this is the first story we've had that's like a historic dramatization.
Except for last week's.
What did we do last week?
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Oh shit! Yeah. Yeah, that's, but that was was a play, and it felt different.
It did. It did feel very different.
Yeah, because
it did carry that play vibe about it.
Because also, I don't think there was a murder when Ma Rainey was recording something at one of her studio. I don't think that actually happened.
I don't think so. I think that's all. Yeah. I think that's all for dramatic effect in the story.
Yeah, yeah. Just as part of the play. But like, right. All this stuff actually happened.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's like, I'm really looking forward to Regina King, the movie that Regina King just directed. That's getting a ton of buzz. And I'm
blanking. First off, you know how much I love Regina King.
I do too. I really like her work.
She is
fantastic. I've seen a couple of interviews with her recently, and she's just kind of a very cool person. Also, aside from her acting talent, she's also just a very cool person. Dan Rather does an interview show, and I found it, and it like Dan Rather, like for being an old white guy, is really cool. Like he's really cool, and I found it on the AXS channel, which does a lot of music stuff. It does a lot of concert broadcast concerts, music documentaries, things like that. And I just kind of stumbled across, oh, I like that band. I'm going to watch this documentary. And then they started advertising these other things to me. And one of them is with these shows with Dan Rather, and he's interviewing a bunch of old musicians.
Yeah.
He also interviewed Regina King, and the interview he gave with her was just fantastic. She kept calling him Mr. Rather. And like he starts pulling some deep cut information as he's interviewing her. She's like, oh my God, I just can't believe that you know this stuff about me. It's so incredible to me that Mr. Dan Rather is interviewing me about this stuff. Like just so genuinely happy to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
She was just very cool. 'Cause he said something about, being savage, and she's like, God, I'm so glad you used that word. I'm really sick of hearing strong black woman. I really like savage or fierce. It was fierce. And she's like, I really like that, because it's, you know, you don't have to pretend to be stoic and emotionless and be strong. Mm-hmm. It was a cool interview. She's a very neat person. But she recently directed a movie. I'm blanking on what it's called.
The Harder They Fall.
Was that it? One Night in Miami.
One Night in Miami. What? Well, that's not even on this list.
One Night in Miami. She directed it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's because it's under the as director
section. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, not as actor. Yep.
So the movie is based on a thing that really happened.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that really happened was in Miami, Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown all got together in a room to discuss. They just had a discussion. This is a fictionalization of that discussion because nobody really, no one really knows what happened.
Yeah,
and this is another stage play, but it's like these four guys talking about their roles in the civil rights movement and the cultural upheaval that's going on in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look at this list. Aldous Hodge, Lance Reddick.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I don't believe this one is available for streaming yet. Or is it? It's Prime Video. I think it came out as a Prime Video release, so I don't know if they've got it.
I don't know who this guy is. I don't know who Kingsley Ben-Adir is.
I know Ben Kingsley is, but that's not the same person.
By the way, so after WandaVision ended, all right, I started at Iron Man, and I rewatched in order all of the Marvel movies up to, I am at Spider-Man Homecoming, and I can't find it. It's not on Disney Plus, and I actually don't know which of the 18 streaming services exist now it's on. Like, I know it's on one of them. I just don't know which one it is, and I haven't, like, finished looking for it. But goddamn, Ben Kingsley is used to perfection in Iron Man 3. His performance
he is
really
wonderful. Good in that. He is, like, I know about how much you love Ragnarok.
Uh-huh.
But I have a feeling that Marvel wouldn't have taken quite the chance they took in Guardians and then follow that up with Guardians 2 and Ragnarok if it's not for Iron Man 3.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and specifically that
time, right?
Was it?
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
It's like, I think Guardians was like two movies after Iron Man 3. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it just feels like that's such a, like, it was such a turn for Marvel movies to have such a strong comedic element as that switcheroo they played in Iron Man 3.
Yep.
Boy, I know it pissed a lot of geeks off, but man, it's
not
still
me. It
so
was
fucking
really
good.
Fucking good.
It's so good. Like, oh, this is Mandarin, and we were expecting Mandarin. And when you get somebody like Ben Kingsley, all right, I can, all right, that, all right, Mandarin.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Yep. Well, I mean, you know, Mandarin does feel like super racist-y. So, like, it feels like the character, to present that character, you gotta make a lot of moves to make it not seem terrible, which they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goddamn, Ben Kingsley was so fucking good.
Apparently, Spider-Man Homecoming, according to Decider, is on Fubo TV. Otherwise, you can rent it in a million places.
Tony, we just reinvented cable. That's all we did with this fucking streaming thing.
Yeah. Well,
we're like,
this is...
let's ditch cable, and then let's just make cable again, only more expensive.
This is exactly what all the people who proposed we reinvent cable were asking for.
Yeah.
I want an a la carte service where I can pick what I want and get what I want and watch what I want. Yeah, you've got exactly
well,
what you
got
wanted.
It.
This is it.
And it sucks. It just sucks.
Yeah. And we're still paying for television.
Well, that's you.
Yeah. We also, I'm not happy with the bandwidth we've got to do all streaming. Mm. It's just not, it's not quite there yet for my service of choice for internet service. Cause I have a real hard time going to Spectrum.
Yeah.
Around here, there are just too many complaints of service dropping, and considering, you know, we just live at home now. We work and live and school and everything from home.
Yeah.
I'm just not.
Like, now it matters.
Yeah. I'm not taking the chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just can't have the service drops when the kids are taking a test or something. It's just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I don't know. Spectrum here is wonderful. I've never had a problem with it, but you know, we live an hour from each other.
There is that.
So yep.
There is that.
I also live next to the Missouri Edward Jones headquarters. So turns out Maryland Heights has got that whole telecommunication infrastructure locked down.
Yeah, within about, I want to say a mile in one direction and about a quarter mile in the other. I'm between two hospitals right now. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the last time we lost power.
Yep.
Like, I just could not tell you. Now, granted, we're also, I mean, the neighborhood was built 25 years ago. So, like, all of our services are underground. We don't have any poles. No poles. We have light poles, but we have no telephone. We have no power. Nothing is above ground. Everything's underground.
Wow.
Well,
look at my below ground infrastructure.
It apparently is more stable
Oh yeah, I fucking bet. Because
also the wind, when the wind whips through here, it gets pretty wicked.
Oh yeah, it was a windy day today too.
It was.
Oh, it's because it's gonna rain for the next 4 days.
Yeah, I was gonna grill today, and then the wind just kept getting stronger. I'm not gonna grill because the way the wind blows, it would blow right at me when the grill is open. Yeah, not. No, I want steak. I don't want to be a steak.
Yeah. Oh, I've been grilling a lot lately. That's very nice.
We're grilling more and more, and then like, so I've got these steaks sitting here, and I was like, fuck, I don't want to waste these steaks. You know, I don't want to just slapdash them out there. So I tossed them in the freezer, and I said, how do you feel about steak for your birthday? So we're just going to wait a week. Also, daylight saving time kicks in this week, which means it'll be staying light until 6:30, 7 o'clock, which works for us because Holden's in rehearsals until 6, so it makes grilling difficult. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to grill. You're going to eat cold food.
Yep.
So we'll be able to get around that little problem.
These all sound like logistical nightmares.
You know what? The logistics is all working out now, though. Daylight saving time comes to the rescue for once.
Yeah, unless the day I'm getting my vaccine.
Oh.
It's going to be an unpleasant morning.
One, what time you got?
9.
Oh, so 8?
Yeah. And I have to go to Walmart, which is...
Ugh.
But it's also the Walmart that's like closest to me, so I'm just very good at getting appointments.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of practice there.
Mm-hmm. Finally, years of Gen Con room grabs have paid off.
Those skills come in handy at some point.
Yeah.
F5.
Multiple browsers. Ugh.
Yeah, that was like the first day of remote learning here. Like this, all the services were just log jammed.
Yeah.
Like I was posting stuff like, some of you people have never bought concert tickets online before.
Yeah, no
really
shit.
Fucking shows. Yep. It's like, sign out, wait 5 minutes. It'll be fine. Once we're not all trying to connect at the exact same second, it will be fine. Yep. Just take a breath.
Also, it's like day one. No one knows what's going on. You're not going to be late for anything. Like, if you can't get on, no one can get on. Like,
yep. Oh, there's some people you just could not tell that to. What's funny to me is that you still can't. Like, there's some people you still can't tell any of this to.
Yeah.
Like, they just keep...
What? So, this happened the other day, and it's a goddamn nightmare, and it's such a small thing. All right? So, my boss had to do this sales presentation thing. So, he joins a Zoom with me afterwards, okay? And his background is blurred out and replaced with some other thing, like a background thing, which he's never had before. So I'm like, why do you have that? And he's like, they told me to put this on because the background is just this room, and they didn't think it looked professional enough. Okay, so his room is neater than, like, he also just has like a closet door behind him like I do.
Yeah.
But, like, it's actually a nicer closet. Like, the wall looks nicer than my wall. But, like, here's the nightmare part of this. The nightmare part of this is, all right, this is, I'm not using the word unprecedented, but these are like wild, lawless times, right? As a society, we are going through a catastrophe. And everyone's doing the best they can. But now we've reached the point where we're no longer making allowances for that. And we're going to try and force normalization, like force this artificial work culture normalization back into this scenario. And that's a fucking nightmare. Because next it's going to be, well, you know, when you're working, you probably should have a collared shirt on. I mean, that's not really, we don't really do that. Like, we don't really have a dress code in our office. But, you know, if we're doing video shit with clients now, when we weren't doing it before, like, that might actually be a thing. And it's like, ugh, come on. Like, haven't we been through enough? Like, we've shed the necessity for us to be in these close physical locations, and we're all working remote. Like, is there a reason to go back to these pointless traditions? Like, there's just no, I don't know why we have to go back to this bullshit. Luke says we live in a society, but he's bullshit too.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is some societal bullshit. Just like collared shirts and ties are. Like,
yeah, fucking ties.
I hate ties. Ties are the worst. Like, I can't tell you how much I hate ties.
I hate ties.
I hate ties. I hate collared shirts.
All right, here's the thing. I actually really like, I think ties look really sharp. And I've got like 6 or 7 silk ties, and they look amazing. They're all real bright, clear colors. And I think they look amazing. But I
When I have to wear a tie, I look good wearing a tie. Mm-hmm. But I fucking hate wearing ties. God damn, I hate wearing ties.
Probably about the end of 2019, I was really into dressing sharp. Like, I had fixed my dress game, and I was looking trim and sharp. But that is not the case any longer.
No, now we're living that t-shirt life.
Yeah, now I'm back to the t-shirt life.
Yeah, I mean, I even for work, I don't tend to wear collared shirts. Like, I have some, like, the quarter-length button-down shirts, but they're still collarless.
Yeah.
And I admit, for the first couple of months of the pandemic, on days when I knew I'd have a meeting, I'd wear one of the shirts that I only wore to work. Like, my work shirts are kind of t-shirts. They just don't have anything on them. Mm-hmm. Or they're of a different material. They're still cut mostly like t-shirts or long sleeve t-shirts. Yeah, I've stopped that pretense altogether. Now the thing is I just try to make sure that my, you know, if I have something on the shirt, I just make sure that it's not in frame.
Yeah, I was on a sales call and it was my fucking nightmare. The guy's like, why does everybody have their camera off? Oh, come on, man. What are you doing? Why are you like this? And I'm like, well, I'm wearing a t-shirt. And he's like, you're wearing a t-shirt to a sales call? And I'm like, dude, come on, man. Fuck. Fine.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Fortunately, for most of the meetings that we're in now, I mean, if it's a meeting with just between like 2 or 3 people, we'll leave our cameras on just because it's awkward. Mm-hmm. But if it's more than like 4 people and one person's doing the bulk of the talking, everybody else just turns their camera off. That person will stay on just to, like, as a presenter, or they'll be presenting some screen so you don't even need to see them. But yeah. Otherwise, everybody just they'll do it at the beginning just to say hi so you can see somebody's face and then boop off.
Yeah,
which I appreciate. And everybody in my house appreciates too, because these meetings tend to happen around lunchtime and my kitchen is right behind me. Mm-hmm. So for a while, everybody was avoiding doing things in the kitchen while I was on a meeting.
Yeah. The camera thing, I don't know. It just seems excessive. We have like a big internal meeting like twice a week. I actually like the camera situation there just so I can see my coworkers, you know, just like make it feel like I actually work as part of a group. But
yeah.
But I actually haven't worked out what my back to the office plan will be post vaccine. I think I might go in 1 or 2 days a week.
I'm not sure what our plan is going to be at the Garden. Last I heard, there's actually rumblings that they're going to maybe think about talking about having a work from home policy in place. Mm-hmm. Because like, oh, hey, there were a lot of people that were forced to work from home and have been doing so for 51 months now.
Yeah.
So maybe we do need weeks. Yeah. Weeks. Jesus. Yeah. It feels like it. Got to feel like it.
This is where the plague started.
Yeah. 51 weeks ago, we were basically sent home and told, don't come back until we tell you you're allowed to. And I still haven't been told I'm allowed to. Like, I felt compelled to tell my boss, hey, I've got the first round of the vaccine. Is there any? He's like, we haven't even had discussions about what it means to have the vaccine when you come back to work. Like, yep. We're still just trying to figure it out.
Well, in March of last year, my boss told me that the office was going to be back open April 15th. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, this thing's overblown. Don't worry about it. And I was like, dude, what are you talking about? This is not even fucking close to what's going to happen. Then April became June, and then June it was the fall, and I'm like, dude, just stop. You don't have to keep being wrong. You can just say, I don't know, and then wait.
The garden as an institution, they said, all right, we're gonna be out until at least like March 27th or whatever the arbitrary date they had. It was a couple of weeks out. Then after a week, they're like, April 15th. Then like by April 1st or 2nd passes, we're like, sometime in June. And then by I think probably the beginning of May, all the communication was for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And it's like, until further notice, for the foreseeable future, just we're going to stop predicting because we're just wasting everyone's time by putting arbitrary dates on this.
Yeah, having meetings about it. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, our office has actually been open the entire time. There's only like eight or nine people who work out of our office, though. So the majority of people just don't go in. But, you know, a couple people for a change of scenery have been going in, and they're like largely there by themselves almost. So
yeah.
It's like our full office. They have the whole run of the full office.
Well, when this started for our IT department, there were only like seven people who were on the list to possibly be allowed to go back into the building. And one of them was like our VP, and he's like, I don't know why they put me on that list. Like,
I'm not going there.
I shouldn't be one of the people who needs to physically be there to do things. We need our networking, you know, and our hardware people that. Mm-hmm. And then when people were scheduled in, it was one person per day in the building, or not in the building, but in our department. So like, you were scheduled for one day a week in our building. And then no one else was there that day unless, you know, something happened and their specific hardware know-how needed to be on campus. Like they couldn't do whatever they needed to do from offsite. No, otherwise it was one person a day and that was it.
Wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I do miss my office at work. My office at work is actually bigger than this bedroom that I've turned into my office.
Mine is comparable in size. And mine's not an office, it's a cubicle, but it's a huge cubicle. It's a huge fucking cubicle. It's not quite this big. It feels like it because of the walking space, but
nice thick door.
Oh, I don't have a door.
Oh, I got a fucking door. You use that shit all the time. Yeah. Knock on it even. Ooh.
Oh. Got to get you one of those Matt Lauer buttons where you can push a button at your desk and it closes and locks the door.
Oh, I don't think I need that.
Apparently that was one of the shitty things that dude was doing. Like,
oh my God.
He had like literally had a button that would close and lock his door.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, and he used that to... Oh,
you're that guy's boss. What reasonable thing does that do for you that you're like, yeah, he needs that? Ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucking weird.
It is weird. Clean. Yeah, I miss... I've got some artwork on my walls and stuff like that. I miss some of that. I have gotten a couple of things for my birthday last year that was like, here, this will be for your desk at work when you go back. So
how's that going, Tony?
Aaron bought me this artwork that she was supposed to paint. And she got it for me for my birthday last year. Mm. Now my birthday is at the end of March. The idea was she would get it and paint it. It's still unpainted.
How's that going?
So I keep teasing her. It's like, oh, you know what I want for my birthday? For you to paint that?
Yeah. The gift from last year.
Or she'll talk about doing some piece of artwork for me for my birthday. And I'm like, oh, so will you give it to me, then paint it at some later date? So her go-to answer, she's figured out, her go-to answer is, well, it was for your office. So when you go back, you'll have it, and it'll be painted by then. You little shit.
Listen, I gave it to you for your birthday, but I didn't specify which birthday.
No, no.
49 is not a milestone.
No, not the same. Not quite the same.
So when I was a kid, I did something. I graduated from something, or, you know, changed schools or something. I don't know. My parents had a party and then people gave me cards with money in it. Well, my grandma gave me this card. It said some moolah for Eula. Only the card was empty and there was no money in it. So it has become a family joke for quite a long time.
That's amazing. We've done some things where we'll repurpose cards that people have given us. What was it on my sister-in-law's, one of her birthdays? It was like one of her milestone birthdays. I gave her a sympathy card. And then I want to say it was for her 40th birthday. I gave her an anniversary card, and it was happy first anniversary of your 39th birthday. Cause she was fighting it really hard. She did not like, that was her, I don't want to turn 40. You know, like that was the, people have lines and they just don't want to age past mm-hmm. that. That was her line. And so I started giving for a year, maybe two, I give her anniversary cards.
Dude, calm it down back there.
Things to be said.
These fucking animals.
Got commentary about this film.
Yeah. Well, he is black, so, you know, maybe he has a deep cultural connection with it.
He's got insights that we just don't have.
Yeah, so he's got to sing the song of his people. The movie was very good.
Yeah.
I didn't...
I was surprised and not surprised that the events were mostly historic and authentic.
Yeah, that's depressing.
Yeah.
Every new thing I learn makes everything else shit.
It's really telling that we can have such really great stories mm-hmm. about things within the African American community and the history, and they in large part don't need to be fictionalized.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't need to just have some fictional story. We just tell a real thing that happened and have it be just this incredible story, along with, you know, learning some history along the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing that was, I think, the most surprising to me, is just how many of these movies we've seen recently that have been true and just don't seem like it. Because we weren't told the truth.
Yeah, the history. Yeah. So, well, the second most wild thing about this thing today is she's still alive. Dominic Fishback's still alive.
Her
character, Deborah Johnson. His son is still alive. And his son is the chairman of the Chicago...
Was it Panther Cubs or something?
Serves on the advisory board of the Black Panther Party Cubs, a revolutionary organization continuing the ongoing fight for the self-determination of black people. Fred Hampton Jr. is the party's chairman.
Yeah, that was noted in the end credits too. Yep. Like that was one of the facts that they spun up there. That was shocking to me.
Yeah, I actually just turned it back on so I could read that.
Like that feels like the exact wording that was in the movie. I wasn't 100% sure. turns out
that's pretty wild, though. You gotta imagine, it's gotta be like, you gotta have some feelings if you're Deborah Johnson. They make this movie,
like, yeah,
that's gotta be some feelings, right? And then also you're Fred Hampton Jr.
Yeah, I was thinking of him. Like,
you gotta have some feelings.
Guy? What is,
because
this?
He never met his dad kid?
No.
Which is wild, but he's, like, presumably grown up with, like, the legend of his father, and, like, it's interesting to me, like, not to harp on Stacey Abrams, but, like, it's interesting to me the way that we have fetishized patriotism as, like, a bigger flag and a bigger gun, but, like, the most patriotic stories that we have here is, like, Stacey Abrams... Brian Kemp cheated that election away from her. Like, he stole that election from her. And, like, I don't know. If it was me, I would probably be done with the whole fucking situation just in general. And, like, the harshest revenge that she has is like her organization efforts between 2018 and 2020 to take the two Senate seats in Georgia and largely the presidential election in Georgia as a whole. Like, she has been one of the biggest influences on politics for the next 10 years. Like,
right.
Like, and that's a hell of a revenge story. That's like deep patriotism. Like, the system is stacked against you, and instead of turning away from it, you resist it so hard that you even beat the House.
Yeah, I've been referring to the to what you're talking about with patriotism is the weaponization of patriotism,
mm-hmm.
because that's the way it feels. Like, it feels like, you know, you're trying to out macho people with your patriot peen.
Yeah,
and like. We see it a ton in our hometown here, in our where I live, because we're just a couple of miles from a military base, and there's a lot of retired military, a lot of people who are active military live in town, a lot of retired military are in town. We are a pretty red area, even for how close we are to a metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
Being Southern Illinois, there's a lot of that, but like it seems unnaturally high where we're at right now. And it's that it's, oh, well, I was in the military. It's like, okay. Yeah, I grew up on military bases. You know, what do you want a prize? Like,
I didn't do either of those things and I don't feel like it matters.
Right. So yeah, what you said about Stacey Abrams and fighting against the system and working and using the system and using your influence to affect local politics, statewide politics, that your effect of the statewide politics has affected national politics.
Yeah. It's like the book's fascinating because, you know, she wrote it, it came out in June of 2020, which means that she was writing it at the end of 2019. So yep. All of the events of the 2020 election were in the future.
Yeah.
So it's just really fascinating for her to line out the priorities and all the lessons she learned about making people, like getting out to get people signed up to register to vote, hitting the pavement to get them out to vote, organizing like transportation for them to get them to vote, like to undo all the voter suppression tactics. And it's just interesting to lay out for her to lay out what her priorities were going to be from the lessons she learned. And then with the context of having seen the results of how they worked in the next election, it's just really interesting to watch that, to read that parallel.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a ton else to say about the movie that I can think of.
Yeah. Me neither.
Honestly, one of the things that it was interesting was how they, I don't know if this is something that Fred Hampton did or if this was something they played up for the film. But when Daniel Kaluuya was giving those speeches, there was more of a dialect to his, to the way he was speaking and I think it was probably speaking to his audience.
Yeah.
I wasn't used to it. And in the beginning of the movie, no, I had to put on
subtitles
because he also was like almost whispering during a few of his speeches. So it was like, it was just hard to hear him. And it wasn't that it was not understanding. It was just hard to hear him because the timbre of his voice is also kind of low. And in that whisper register, which is a little tough to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need it halfway through the movie. I don't know if the, you know, he was just, I mean, at that point he was giving more boisterous speeches. Like he was really trying to rally crowds instead of small groups of people in a single room.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice when he was giving those speeches, the cadence, dialect, what, you know, I don't know the proper terminology of what he did there. But yeah. The voice changed. I just found it interesting that he was speaking to those people.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to watch the code switch.
Yeah. I think code switching was
amongst different groups of black people, because you usually think of it in context of like white people to black people.
Right. Yeah, because it felt like maybe he always talked like that, and they code switched to white people speak for the movie, for telling the story of the film.
Yeah. There's a really long Slate article about what's true and what's not in this story.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's very long, though, and I'm not reading it. But apparently there was a 1971 documentary about the death of Fred Hampton, and in it they have a lot of videos of his speeches, which would be interesting to watch.
That would be.
I would watch some of his videos. The Murder of Fred Hampton, 1971. All right, that's what I got.
I did find that scene amusing when the FBI guys were all trying to narrate the letters that were going out.
Oh yeah.
Dig in.
Have you heard them say that?
What does that mean?
Pretty sure I've heard them say
that. Use it. And then he says something and he doesn't even mention it.
At the end, he reads the letter to him. And at the end, he's like, dig in. What? He's like, some white person wrote that. Like,
yeah.
The cops wrote that. The cops don't write.
Yeah.
That shit was funny.
That was funny. That's a great movie.
Yep.
All right. So maybe we'll be here next week. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm assuming not. Yeah. We haven't figured out what we're going to talk about next. When we do, I'll post it.
Why don't you post it?
I think I might.
Ho, ho, ho.
If I am so inclined.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Call it a night. See you.